Tim Brody, and you're listening to Moving Forward, a podcast about relationships, teams, and leaders, and how to get the best out of all of them. This is episode number 3. We're starting to know each other a bit better. With that in mind, I want to share with you a secret. It's what we'll call this episode. The secret, and the title is, I See People. The philosopher and rabbi Martin Buber was born in Austria in 1885 and died in Israel in 1965. I kind of like old Martin. He had a unique way of breaking down how people interact with each other. Basically, he said there's two ways we can be in relationship. I it or I thou. We can either see people as people or things. That's really it. Let that sink in for a bit. Let me help you. Draw into your imagination, into your mind's eye, someone who you've had a really rough time with. I mean a down and out nasty time. You know what I mean. That kind of situation where your mouth dried all out as you spoke to them and little white things were flying out as you yelled. Picture that person in your imagination standing in front of you. You've got a couple things to say to them now, buddy old boy, and they're going to hear it. Now, let's say I were to jump right in and ask you how you would describe that person with only a word or two. It's okay to be really authentic. They can't hear you. What are the words you'd use to describe them? I bet those words are mean at best and vulgar at worst. You know what you just did? You dehumanized them with your words. And it's okay. We all do it at one time or another. In fact, it's a biological necessity. If we're going to do harm or think evil about someone, the first step is to stop recognizing their humanity. In Buber's words, we relate to them from the experience of I-it. If we want to resolve issues, we have to begin to rehumanize. To recognize the divine humanity in the people around us, we need to switch to the paradigm of I-thou. Let me give you a couple of examples. Years ago, I was going to Toronto with my son, Kyle. It was his first time in that big city and his first time being in the company of street people. He was wide-eyed as we walked the streets, seeing people in unkempt clothing sitting on the sidewalks with their hands out. I remember him asking me who these people were. I explained to him that they were people who didn't have homes or jobs for a number of reasons, and they relied on passers-by to provide for them. Kyle has always been a truly compassionate and sensitive person. His eyes filled with tears as I told him what being homeless means. I said to Kyle, imagine how wonderful these people are. They've come to Earth to spend their lives in want, hunger, and solitude, so they could have a 10-second encounter with you and teach you gratitude. They love you so much that they'd come in and live this existence so you can realize and be grateful for all the things that you have, and to teach you to share and reach out to your fellow humans. You might think I laid it on a bit thick. I don't think so, because this is what I really believe. However, I watched my young son work through this in his mind. He pondered it, he chewed on it, and then he acted, much to my astonishment. You see, what he did reinforced my belief that I am truly a lucky father. He continued walking down the street, and the next homeless person we met, Kyle went over to him and with deepest sincerity looked the rather dirty fellow right in the eye, held out his hand, and said, thank you. In the middle of Toronto on a hot summer day, my 10-year-old boy showed me what it looked like to simply see a person in their fullest sense. A couple of years later, I was in Toronto on my own. I had finished a weekend of coach training. It was a wonderful, warm Sunday evening. I was whiling away the time waiting for my train by sitting outside on a park bench, enjoying the sunshine and thinking about eating an orange that was in my pocket, when this homeless fellow came up to me. He said that he had to get train fare to get back to Guelph to meet a court-ordered situation. Well, I knew it was a fabricated story, but I chose to take on Kyle's perspective of gratitude for the opportunity to meet another human. who could show me how blessed I was. When I opened my heart, the lesson was powerful. This is how it played out. I said that I'd love to help. I introduced myself and then learned that my new friend's name was Billy. I opened up my wallet and said that I had $100. I wondered if he would take $60 and allow me to keep $40 for my ride home, as I thought I might like supper. He agreed that seemed fair. Then I told him I was about to enjoy an orange, and I asked if he'd like to share it with me. It was at this point that I saw his eyes overflow, and he threw his arms around my neck in the warmest hug I think I've ever had. We sat there, the two of us sharing an orange that day in the Toronto sunshine. We shared stories about where we grew up. It became quickly apparent that Billy was unused to being seen as a person. He was typically looked down upon by those passing by. He did have an alcohol addiction. He told me that as we shared our stories. He seemed really pleased that I didn't judge him because of that. I remember later recounting this story to some friends who said that I had just enabled an alcoholic. I thought about that long and hard. Part of the problem with seeing the humanity in Billy was that I had actually had, in a very short time, begun to care about him. I thought about it more, and then it occurred to me, from all my experience with alcoholics and alcoholism, one of the recurring themes seems to be that a person needs to find their own rock bottom before they can recover. So what if Billy took the money I'd given him and used it to buy more liquor? If I was helping him find his way to rock bottom more quickly, then so be it. If our chat and shared orange created in him the perspective that he has value, then so be that too. The point is, it's not for me to decide. That wonderful man is on his own journey, and we had but a moment together. From where I was sitting, it was a pretty great moment. And it all started with seeing him as a person, recognizing his humanity. How can one apply that lesson in real-world situations about team building and relationships with difficult people? It's the first step. Let me show you what I mean. Let me explain something I'd like to call the conflict vortex. Let's get back to that person still creeping around in your brain. The one that I asked you to envision a while back. All right. You got that image in your mind again? Good. Now let's think about the most annoying thing this person does. Go ahead and say it out loud. Heck, write it down. You really want to be clear about this. They might do a number of things, but what's the most bothersome? Just define the action, capture it. It's step one. Now, let's go to step two. When they do this thing, how do you see them? Give me the words that you use to describe them in the midst of their action. Are they bullies? Are they ignorant boors? Are they arrogant demigods? Really describe them in the way that most captures them at their worst. All of these words, they're step two. Get them all out, and then let's go to step three. Now consider all the definitions that you've ascribed to this person. Look at the words, or think about them. Bully, worm, jackass. Whatever words you've used to describe how you see this person, consider how you feel when you're around someone who fits those words. Really get inside your own body. Get a sense for how your breathing is when you're in the same atmosphere as someone like that. How does your chest feel? How about your shoulders, your hands, your head? What do you do when you feel like that? What are the actions that come out of you when that emotional state is triggered? Really get a sense for that and articulate it clearly to yourself. Say it aloud. Write it down. It's step three. Now, we're going to step four. When you're feeling and acting that way, how do you think the other person sees you? Be honest. Also, you should know that as part of our species, they are emotionally intuitive as well. So even some of your best masks can't fully hide the emotion that they're feeling from you. Really consider this question. How do they see you? Articulate that for yourself. Oh, this is how they see me. Now, given how they see you, how might they act? Do you remember what was at step one? Let me remind you. At step one, I asked you to name something that the other person did that really annoyed you. Do you see now how step four leads you right back to step one? And the wheel on the bus goes round and round and round. You're caught in a conflict vortex. The best way to get out, to break the cycle that you're caught up in, is to change your behavior. You can't change someone else's behavior any more than you can push a rope. You can change yours, though. How do you do it? The very first step is to start recognizing the other person as a person. To look at them as a human. They have hopes, dreams, fears, and beliefs. Their dreams might not be the same as yours, but they still have them. They are a human being. Look at them that way, and you'll start to feel a gentle flow of possibility. Martin Buber's explanation isn't just a flight of fancy. When we engage with objects, we use the cortex part of our brain. When we engage with humanity, we use the limbic brain, complete with its open mirror neurons looking for connection. Put your heart at peace and reconnect with this human that you would have described with judgment or held with such contempt. There's a relationship waiting to blossom there. Trust me, a guy by the name of Billy showed me this truth. Look, I can't wait to talk with you again. Until then, stay safe, keep warm, and say hello to a stranger. You've been listening to Tim Brody in the show Moving Forward, an offering in relationships, team building, and leadership skills from thebrodies.ca. When relationships matter, we're the people to see. And relationships always matter.